and she was mine. She accepted me for who I was with all my faults. She built me up and encouraged me and trusted my ability to make my own decisions. To the point that when I was about to finish high school and I told her that I was pregnant, she simply asked, "Does the father of the baby love you?" Oh, thank you.
Hello, thank you for joining me today. I'm Mindy McNeil, and I am here with Becky Stone, and she is doing a one-woman show about Maya Angelou, and this is off of I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, is that correct?
This is a Chautauqua-style performance, and the only objective is to present Maya as she was in history and to encourage interaction with the audience. So there is time for questions and answers during every performance.
Okay, so a few things, because as I was watching you, I'm like, oh my gosh, I could never do something like that. My memory is shot. I mean, you tell me something and 6 minutes later, I'm like, what did you just say to me? So there's a lot in that, you know, I mean, to be able to do this, you know, and I know you also, too, you were talking about Rosa Parks, Harriet Tubman, so you're not just a one-woman show. I mean, you're a multi-women. Mm-hmm. So how do you choose the people that you would like to perform as?
I have been asked to do the four characters that I do by the Greenville Chautauqua Society. And the Chautauqua format is, you need acting skills, but you also have to have some scholarship skills to study, research, and then kind of boil it down into something that audiences can take in and hopefully remember. And I have found as a storyteller, because I am basically, primarily a storyteller, that people remember stories, and they're not going to remember dates and facts, but I try to find throughout the year that I am researching the character, I try to find what I think are the most significant stories, and hopefully stories that people don't really know about that person. And it's really helpful if the character has written an autobiography, and Maya wrote 7. So I got a lot of information that she had written. There is YouTube now. I got a lot of information from seeing interviews, and then in bibliographies, I found articles where she was interviewed. So I feel as though, tucked away in my notes or way in the back of my mind, is a lot of information that came right from her about her experience.
And I always like that, because that's firsthand. I mean, you're not going to get anything else. You know, somebody else writing it, you're like, okay, but to get it straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak, that really helps a lot.
Yes, it certainly does. Although I do read what people say and have written about her, and I love hearing stories from people. She only died in 2014. She taught for over 30 years in North Carolina, and I live in North Carolina. So I've heard a lot of anecdotes from people's personal experiences with her, as I did today with the National Council of Negro Women. You know.
And you were sharing. So you do this research, and I love it because, you know, sometimes I do some stand-up, and I'm not a joke person, I'm a story person, because once again, the stories help, and it makes it easier. I think if you're listening, you know, whether it's comedy or if you're listening to a drama, if there's a story involved, like you said, dates and, you know, things like that are one thing, but I feel like if I'm hearing a story, I can relate. Uh-huh. And is that something too, like maybe as you were doing some research on her, were there things in her life that you feel like maybe you could have related to in a certain sense?
Oh, most definitely. I think one of the things that that Maya focuses on in all of her writing, her poetry, as well as her essays and novels, is her experience as a woman. And it speaks, even though, you know, you may not have grown up in the Jim Crow South as a little black girl or whatever, you know, her experience is the human experience for women. And by and large, I would say that's her biggest fan following is women of all sizes, shapes, colors, religious backgrounds, the whole deal.
I work on a show called Stories of Standards, and so we do research on a lot of, I'm not the one who's presenting, I do the research, and we have one of our hosts, Rodney, he, you know, does the presentation every day, and, but, you know, I do research on a lot of the jazz singers, and there's some, as I'm going through, some of them, like, I love them, and some of them, like, oh, no, you were like this, you were mean to this person, you were mean to this family, or you just had this bad reputation, so I get turned off by some of them. So for you, has that been an experience as you were dealing with Dr. Angelou? Or
I felt in reading her first autobiography that I didn't like her because of the kinds of choices and decisions she made. I felt as though if she were my friend, I would say, Maya, don't do that. Don't say that. And she was quite headstrong, and I'm sure she would not have taken my advice. But as it turns out, as I read more and more, other people would give her strong advice against what her intuition would lead her to. So what I grew to feel about her was that I loved her and accepted her and respected her and feel that she was extremely blessed and fortunate to survive, and that what she has given to the world through her life experience and her wisdom, she said such great things. I think I directly quoted her when I said that courage is the most important of the virtues, because without courage, you can't practice any of the other virtues with consistency. And, you know, in her writings, you will experience times when she has been inconsistent and she's had to rely on courage to kind of pull her back in line, and the courage to, one thing I really respect about her, but that she even tells in a story that her son took exception to and had a serious talk with her about this, is that if you were in her company and said anything disparaging about anyone, race, gender, anything, she would get rid of you. Leave my house this instant. Go. And she would just not accept an apology. She was intolerant of people who breached that moral standard for her. And you've got to respect that, because how many times have you been in the company of people and thought, seething under your breath, like, you know, and have done nothing about it? And I think it's really important for people who do that, make that kind of misstep, for them to be called on it. And you might not always want to call them on it by saying, get out of here. But she did that. And that's courage to me. And it, you know, as one in that anecdote, the woman who was kicked out said, oh, people always think you're so nice. Well, now I'm going to tell them how mean you are. And she could hear that and just say, I'm sorry. And then her son complained to her about it. And she said, Guy, I love you. I would not be happy to do that to anyone you brought to our home. But if they acted the way that woman acted, they would be out the door. Yeah. She was consistent.
No, and that's good, because I think, especially just even in this day and age, a lot of inconsistencies or unsteadiness, so I appreciate that about her. But I have a question for you. Okay, you're doing different characters, and I know we were talking about Harriet Tubman, Rosa Parks, Dr. Maya Angelou. Who's the fourth character?
Pauli Murray, who was a civil rights activist, a poet herself, a feminist. She was, she even had contact with Ruth Bader Ginsburg, contacted Pauli Murray with one of her first cases defending a woman for her civil rights. So Pauli Murray is just very little known, but she was remarkable, just like Angelou. She ended her life as the first African-American woman who was ordained an Episcopal priest. Mm-hmm. And she grew up in the Jim Crow South, went full circle through all civil rights, feminist activism. She was one of the founding members of the National Organization for Women. And then the first church where she served communion as an ordained priest was the same church in Chapel Hill where her grandmother was baptized but had to sit in the balcony because she was a slave. Mm-hmm. You know, Murray's life is a really interesting story. And she was the first one I did because there were no other scholars who were presenting her. So the Greenville Chautauqua Society called and said, will you take this on? And I had never dreamed of being a Chautauqua scholar, but I love learning. I have an acting background, and I'm a storyteller, and I thought, this is going to enable me to use all of the things I've been trained in and where I feel I have a gift, and otherwise I wouldn't have taken it on. I'm not like Maya, who would always lie and say, oh, yes, I've done this, or she lied about her age before her first job, but she became the first African-American Negro at that time streetcar conductor in San Francisco. She was too young, and they asked if she could drive, and she lied about having been a chaufferette, as she called it then. You know, that was one of the things I didn't like about her. She did lie, because if I lie, I'm so sure I'm going to get caught in it. Yeah, but she had the intelligence and the determination to just plow through, get what she needed to know to do the job. She was a success. What can I say?
This 45-minute performance, how long does that take you to memorize all this?
I don't need to memorize it. What I've learned are the stories. Over the year, I earmark things that I think should go in the presentation. And then when I'm about 6 weeks out for premiering it, you know, doing it the first time, then I start pulling together specifically the stories. And the stories tell themselves almost. And what I have to work on most carefully is getting them in a reasonable sequence and working out the segue from one story to the next. And what I'm going to start with, I need to grab people's attention. And I heard from anecdotes that people told me when they heard I was doing Maya, that when they heard her speak, she came out singing. And the first person who told me that said that she sang God Put a Rainbow in the Cloud. So I said, all right, that's how I'm going to open it. And I thought, I cannot do a poet without doing some of her poetry. So I chose Still I Rise, because I think it's such a powerfully encouraging poem for anyone.
Do you ever find that any of the characters that you're playing kind of morph into your own life or vice versa? Like maybe if you're doing something that Maya would do, or, you know, picking up something that maybe Harriet did, you know what I'm saying? Just different things like that. Do they kind of overtake your life, so to speak, some of your characters?
Yes, and I often think to think about the other characters, because they were all very strong women who took action, mm-hmm. and also strong women of faith. But Maya was a contemporary woman, and yes, I just find myself wanting to be her. So I will often quote things, and I give her credit, but it's like, as Maya says, when you know better, you do better, that kind of thing.
I did want to ask you, how do you decide what quotes that you are going to be using throughout the play?
That is really hard. And, as you know, and I need to say that as a storyteller, it's not scripted, so it's not really exactly the same every time. And so if a quote comes in that I've forgotten, and I'll just like, oh, and I'll insert that. The only thing I directly quote in the presentation you heard, and I try to do it word for word, is quoting from an interview where she talked about having read during those 5 years when she did not speak.
Okay, so Becky, you had a part right after the show, and you know, you answered questions as Dr. Angelou. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to ask Dr. Angelou, you went for 5 years, you were assaulted by your mom's boyfriend, yes. And you went 5 years without speaking, and I think that's a lot for a little girl, for anybody. So what kind of things went on during those 5 years for you, and what kind of made you break out of that and start speaking again?
Yes, and I'm glad to answer it. that whole incident of being raped at the age of 7 is something that I think about and re-experience in some way the pain of that happening every day, even now that I'm in my 70s. I have never before or since experienced that kind of physical pain. I have had emotional pain almost that matches it. But I did not understand as a 7-year-old what was going on or all of the consequences. I mentioned simply that I testified after I got out of the hospital at his trial, but I lied. And they made it very clear, and my family had always made it very clear to me, never to lie. The attorney asked me if Mr. Freeman had ever done anything like that to me before, and in a rush and a panic, I thought, well, yes, he has, but I don't think I should say. So I said no, when actually in I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, you can read how he cultivated our relationship and would get me on his lap and touch me, what now I know is inappropriate behavior, but he built up love and trust there before he actually raped me. I lied on the stand, and I knew that because I lied, or because what I said on the stand meant that he was found guilty. And then, when he was found dead, kicked and beaten in an alley, I felt that my words did that to him. And I go over this over and over, trying to understand exactly who I was at 7 and a half to go through that kind of thing. At that age, I decided that I was to blame, and I took it on myself. And the only way I could guarantee that I wasn't going to do something horrible again with my words was to not speak them aloud. You can think about something if you're going to write it down, and you can assent, you know, nod yes or no, and people say back to you what they think you're trying to. But I was no longer going to initiate anything that could cause harm to people. And perhaps that's where my sensitivity comes to how people brutalize each other with language and names and comments. And that's something I've carried all my life. But certainly, by the time I started talking to again, and it was literature, and that brought me back, poetry specifically, to having the courage to think that if I speak these beautiful words, I'm not going to be killing anyone. And so I consciously chose to go back to speaking with Mama and Uncle Willie, and because I knew they would be safe, and then eventually others. So it's always been a process of learning to forgive myself for those things that happened so far in my past that have informed me that you need to be forgiving yourself throughout life and in all aspects.
Great. Thank you very much, Dr. Angelo. I appreciate it. And Becky, I want to say thank you so much just for this time that you've taken just to open us up to just a different side to Dr. Angelo.
It's been a pleasure.